This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, stories, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, Brenda Romero, and the hundreds of other Patreon supporters, PayPal supporters, everything supporters, really, who are helping me make this podcast possible and pay down my debt. If you want to join the fun, the site's at podcast.textfiles.com. It's a very good week for me. This was the week that I finally transferred all of the mini DV tapes I could easily find in my storage unit and put them up on the Internet Archive. Mini DV tapes were what I used to film the BBS documentary, that 4 or 5 year project that ended up with a 3 DVD set, and which I sold for many years until I finally went through the entire inventory of 7,000 copies quite a few years ago now. This mini DV set represents years of my life, traveling all through states. I think I hit 30 states in total, along with a couple Canadian provinces. It's about 200 hours of people talking, and it's them talking about bulletin board systems, early technology, the relationships and family and friends they built through bulletin board systems, and unintentionally, a time capsule of what technology meant to people in 2001 to 2005. It's something that I've had on my back burner for years now. I believe that documentaries scoop up all sorts of sideways value when they record people for a while. I remember watching a documentary about New York City that had all sorts of interesting figures, and those figures would talk about one thing or another, and you would get maybe 2 or 3 sentences from these relatively famous people or infamous people, and my mind raced at the time and said, oh, surely these people said some other amazing things. I would love to be able to hear them. Well, I met someone for the first time, usually in their home, occasionally in their office, occasionally with other sets of people in a public space like a restaurant or a business, and then I would ask them questions about that time, telling them stories or asking them what their thoughts were on things that were going through my mind from previous interviews, and then just letting them go. I've talked before about what I call the soliloquy, which is where somebody will find out they're going to be in the BBS documentary. They would have in their mind some sort of story, and I found it lasted between 10 and 20 minutes, where they would sit down and say, okay, this is everything you have to know about, and they would talk about it. They got all the answers out that they wanted to talk about, and then I, having listened to those answers, said, oh, there's other questions from that. What about this? What about that? What about your feelings on this other thing I just heard about? You're there to find out how this person perceived that world, that experience. And it's 200 hours of that. When I moved everything out of my shipping container on my brother's property and got rid of most of it off to museums and institutions, I was left with a largish pile of things that I needed to deal with. I've been putting up pictures of that remaining pile, and it basically has 4 different types of things. It has old memories and pieces of mine, trinkets, phone bills, cards, toys, pieces that were given to me as gifts or that I picked up while I was at some event. Then I have a bunch of electronics and plugs that I knew should follow the computers or maybe be thrown out. I just didn't have the time to sort them, and I've begun sorting them, and there's a lot of that as well. Then I have material that is media. And that media is basically everything magnetic and optical. CD-ROMs, floppy disks, cassettes, mini DV tapes, VHS tapes, stuff that I should really sit down, turn into digital data, upload to the archive, or put in other locations, because there's only going to be so many more times that I can read from these things successfully, if at all. And finally, the 4th thing is trash, just stuff that was lucky enough all this time to get into the back of a box, and I just got to throw these things out. As a bit of a note, when I got the tapes out, I was always intending to use a mini DV tape deck that I had acquired for the original BBS documentary production. It's called an AGDV1000, and it's made by Panasonic. And as soon as I put things in, all the tapes were bad, and I started to get really scared. But then I thought, maybe the actual tape machine is starting to go. And I went out to eBay, and I got a replacement. And I want to note that a generous supporter paid for that. It was about $350. And they don't want me to tell people who they are, okay? But it was a real boon, because when it arrived, I found that the tapes were, by and large, functional. Mini DV tapes, if you've never dealt with them, are kind of funny. They're digital, so it's saving a digital signal onto the tapes, and it's got really good time code, and it functions really nicely. But when it goes, it goes. It will flake out. You'll see crackling, or you'll see someone stop moving for a moment. And some of the tapes have that. I have not really figured out which ones have the exact drops where, and many tapes will have the problem at the actual end or the beginning of the tape, as the tape had other problems. You'll see it kind of like fade into existence like some sort of weird Star Trek transmission. It'll crackle and you'll see all these digital flakes, and then suddenly the person's just talking as if it's no big deal. Luckily, as the BBS documentary went on, I would start a conversation with a person, and when I thought that they were loosened up and limber and thinking in this realm, then I would press the record button. And so as a result, you don't miss a whole lot, because the person is just kind of moving out of a kind of side conversation, something about, you know, working on their sidewalk or how weird it was that the news of the day happened. And then they were suddenly talking about bulletin board systems. But that digital flakeout was part of the tape problem. And I've been not listening to these tapes, mostly because I've been trying to get other work done. But also because I kind of lived all this, and it felt kind of weird and wasteful for me to sit and listen to all of that again when I was already in it for so many years. I mean, remember, I recorded all of these, so I was there for that. Then I transferred them again to turn them into digital files. Then I clipped those digital files, and then I listened to them again and again and again to produce the BBS documentary. I took 240 hours of rough footage, and I turned it into maybe 40 hours of clipped footage, and then I edited that 40 hours of clipped footage into 7 hours. I cannot believe the amount of effort I put into that. Until the DEF CON documentary, which actually went up around 300 hours, but the documentary footage, it's been in my life for so long that I just want to move on, and this was part of the way of doing that. My hope is that by putting these up on the Internet Archive and reaching out to people, that others will listen to these interviews, find subjects that are in there, review them, and add those subject lists, and also let me know when a tape transfer didn't work. In other words, I need help. It's part of the whole process. I could easily leave it as it is, but I think part of the issue is going to be metadata. I mean, I don't expect anybody to go and listen to the same 200 hours that I did, but there are some real gems in there. A really good example is Jack Rickard. He's in there. He was the editor of Boardwatch magazine, truly the king of what became the BBS industry. I mean, this guy was a real firebrand of a writer, and he ran businesses like a cowboy, and he was a brutal kind of writer. He would tell people that they were dumb. He would get in their face, and he would write long paragraphs, responses to people in the letters column of Boardwatch magazine. And I knew that my documentary would not be complete until I found Jack. And to my happiness, Jack did ultimately agree to be interviewed. And he was kindly. He met me at his house in Missouri, and he had been renovating it. And we set him up near a window because I kind of wanted to capture the Mississippi River behind him. And he talked about running the business, the BBS industry, his thoughts about where things were great, where they didn't work out. He talked about the BBS cons, which were these conventions that he co-ran with Phil Becker. You know, he was generous to the extreme. And at the end of it, Jack gave me some advice on pricing and marketing. And I'll let you know what he said. I may have said this in a previous episode, but it bears repeating. He asked me how much I was going to charge for the BBS documentary. And I said, well, based on, you know, DVDs out there, I was thinking of charging $15. And he said, you know, Jason, you do that, you're going to end up bankrupt with no documentary to show for it. And I was like, well, okay, what do you think? He goes, I think you should charge people $75 for it. And I was like, whoa, Jack, what are you talking about? He goes, look, you've obviously got people who are interested in this product, and you should make those people, those hardened fans, pay for your mistakes. By that I mean, you should know that there are going to be some unseen mistakes in the production. You're going to find out that you have to reprint something. You're going to find out that it's going to cost more to get some clearance. And then suddenly, you're hit with $3,000 or $4,000 more cost than you budgeted for. And if you have people who have signed up who are paying for your thing to come out at that price, the buffer will be enough for you to get past it and give them the thing they want. I didn't fully listen to Jack. I only charged $50 instead of $75. But knowing it was going to be $50 and making it a 3-DVD set meant that I ended up creating a much better product. I didn't make one single 2-hour movie. I made 8 small movies that added up to about 7 hours. And I was able to make really nice packaging, and I was able to do all of this additional production work because I had pre-orders that already paid for the printing. You know, it was big numbers for me. It was something like $18,000 or $19,000 to print the initial run of the BBS documentary. And I was so happy that it was fully paid for. The production of the DVDs, if not the total cost of production, was totally paid for the day of release. It made things so much easier as sales came in afterwards. Jack was right. He was super right. But I have a coda to that, which makes it even more fun. I would actually look up the lives of some of the people I interviewed over the years. And, you know, some people were very small potatoes. They were individuals who just happened to sit for the documentary. So sometimes I couldn't find them. For people like Jack, who at the time that I interviewed him was worth in excess of $20 million, you know, it was pretty easy to find out what he was up to next. And Jack had really gotten into electric vehicles and collecting vintage airplanes. And so it was fun to kind of keep track of what he was doing. And Jack went after electric vehicles with the same fervor that he went after bulletin board systems. So he would talk about the industry, and he would invite people to come see his electric vehicles, and he would have get-togethers and demonstrations. And it was nice to see that he was still using that carnival barker slash voice of the people slash bully pulpit to promote new technology. Jack was living good. But I had this weird experience. Now, anybody who interacted with him, especially in any sort of business way, always has some sort of Jack story. And so Jack had been sent copies of my documentary. I went to the address that he had last been at when I filmed him, and I mailed him 20 copies of the BBS documentary. I mailed a number of people 20 copy boxes. In other words, I got, you know, 5,000 copies, and almost immediately I took some of these 20 copy boxes and I mailed them to some of the most important figures as basically party favors. They could give them away and say, yeah, I was in a movie and it's about the thing I did. Here you go. And I sent one to Ward Christensen. I sent one to Randy Seuss, who co-created the BBS. I sent one to Jack. I sent it to people who I knew, you know, It mattered. So, years later, imagine my surprise, because I'm on Facebook, when somebody asked Jack about the bulletin board system documentary, and Jack said, "Yeah, that guy. He came to my house, you know, did these interviews, and what a shame. He never came out with it, you know? Totally had a killer product there, but he just didn't know what to do. You know, so just a lesson for you there, you know? You gotta set things right. You gotta plan properly or your dreams will fail. And so, you know, we should think about that." I was like, "What?" So I actually jumped on that comment thread, and I was like, "Hi, Jack, I was there. I did finish it. I did sell it. I in fact took your advice, buddy. I sent you all these boxes of actual finished products. They're probably sitting around your house somewhere, still in the box. Buddy? Hello?" Jack's never responded. Thanks, buddy. You never know. On the whole, people who were interviewed for the BBS documentary, I don't really have any sour memories of. I don't have any case where I go, "Oh, man, thank God for that." I mean, there were a few people who were skeptical before they were interviewed, but afterwards, they were happy to have gotten it all out. I just tracked down Tom Henderson, who was in the ARC Zip episode, and he was the creator of the ARC format. I wanted to let him know that I was releasing all of this footage, and I was worried that he might not want it out there because, you know, it has him crying and stuff. And he said, "No, you know, I've been really happy ever since that interview. You really helped me work through my feelings, and I just put it in the rearview mirror, and I've been living my life. I'm happy. I'm good. So now, put it out there. Just put it out there." So his stuff is out there. Other people's stuff is out there. And I'm watching people enjoy some real fun folks in there. Like I said, there's Jack Rickard. Phil Becker gives a lot of background information. He was working in NASA long before he worked in bulletin board systems. So his approach was pretty interesting to bulletin boards. Scott Brinker gave an amazing interview where he talked about his companion, friend, and at one point boss, Tim Stryker, who made a video game that just got restored, by the way. And he talked about his sadness because Tim Stryker ultimately committed suicide. And he had a whole bunch of things to say about the business. Having all of the tapes of Ward will be something else. Right now, I only have one tape of Ward Christensen up. I'm looking for the others. They'll come up soon. Randy Seuss gave a pretty weird interview. I've got interviews with people from the Chicago Area Computer Hobbyists Exchange, which was the users group that Randy Seuss and Ward Christensen met at. There's all sorts of members in there that I'm sure are gone. One of my favorite first interviews was with a guy named Robert Folks, and Robert had this Laserdisc collection that I believe was basically complete. He had bought every Laserdisc. He had built a wonderful theater in his home. I decided to check up on him 2 days ago, and I discovered that he had died of cancer in 2011. He mentioned he had been part of the Yonkers school system, and I said, "Oh, I actually went to Yonkers school when I was 12 years old. I was in a computer competition. I didn't do as well as I could." And he said, "Oh, I remember you." And he proceeded to pretty well describe who I was at that computer competition. That was really touching. So I was really sad that Robert was gone. But it's nice to know that I've now put up 2.5 hours of Robert talking about his time with computers and education and bulletin board systems, and that his voice will be heard again by his family or by his friends. I've got a bunch of people there who, again, I'm sure are gone, and it's nice to know that there are recordings of them giving a little bit of themselves, a little part of their life, a little part of what they were talking about in a way that will outlive them. So, like I hinted, there are probably a handful of tapes related to the BBS documentary that are still stuck in some other box inside of my storage unit, and I expect within the next month or so probably to find them, get them up, and get the stragglers up in there. But the vast majority are up there. It's ready to go. I hope that the people who look through them and talk about what's on them and find the jewels among the walks that I took through nostalgia with these folks, that those jewels enlighten people. It was a pleasure to do the BBS documentary. It's a pleasure to bring those tapes back. I was in my 30s, and I was recently married, and I announced I wanted to do this crazy film, and even though it took 4 years, I did it. It happened. It was such a pleasure to drive through places I'd never been, meet people I'd never, ever talked to before, and get to know them on the level of their home and their dreams, and then move on. It made me, I think, a more tolerant, a happier person. I understood where human beings came from and how much technology affected people universally. And it was just, it's nice that I have a good home movie for it. The BBS documentary sold out years ago, but bbsdocumentary.com continues to have all of the information that I gathered during the production, all of the info on BBS software and the folks that I interviewed and photos taken along the way. It's a little time capsule for a production that was a percentage of my life. And it's also one of the few places you're going to find some of the bulletin board system programs, information, and insight that otherwise possibly would fall into the loam of the sea and never be seen again. It's something that I wish I saw for other subjects to that depth. Every once in a while, I'll see that somebody did a film, and a lot of them fall into the hour and a half, just got to tell you that this thing was once there and now it is not template. And what I was trying to do with the BBS documentary was save an entire phase of humanity, the phase of human beings going online, using bulletin board systems as a stepping stone. That's what I shot for. That's what I got. And I wish I saw more of that. And now, 12 years later, after I look back at the bulletin board system documentary production, one lesson is clear. Don't be afraid to leap in, to go after your dream. I know it sounds cliche, but it was a dream of mine to go out and tell this story. And I drove around, I stumbled through it. Sometimes the interviews didn't go as well as I would like. Sometimes a person I thought would be interesting wouldn't be. But sometimes a person who I just kind of threw in as a fourth interview that weekend was a fountainhead of brilliant insight and became a core part of the documentary. Meeting 200 people with one thin thread joining them, that made everything worth it. I was so happy at the end. And I was able to bring to others who stumbled on to this production after it was done the joy that I would have felt myself if I had found this package available to tell the entire story of bulletin board systems as well as could be told at the time. Could I have asked for a more delightful legacy? This has been Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, and the hundreds of other supporters who have helped make this podcast possible. This month's debt payoff is pretty simple. I'm going to write a big check to my previous accountant and finish that bill. I planned to pay that off a little while ago, but I ended up paying off family first and other debts, and now it's their time. So a big thank you to Rich for being so patient as it took me this long to pay off my bill to you. Thanks so much for the work you did, taking me from a $35,000 tax bill down to a $24,000 tax bill, because that was a major load off my mind at the time.